There are some things you should always check, like the hygiene rating on your local takeaway, the setting on your razor, and whether the party actually is fancy dress. The other thing you should check is your Experian credit report, especially if you're looking to borrow money. It lets you understand what lenders see, so you can increase your chances of getting the best deals. It's dead easy to check it, and completely free. See it in seconds. Download the Experian app today.
You're listening and maybe watching Peak to Pit, Allie Peak, TJ Pittinger, heading into, what are we at, week 11 of the college football season?
Huh. 75% of the way done. Most teams have played nine games, so 75% of the way done. It's almost over.
Crazy.
Some,
I hate
some
that.
People happier about that than others.
Not
people
me.
May live in South Florida.
They do. That they do.
How was your week? How was your weekend?
It was good. There was a lot going on. Hadley and Hayden each had a gymnastics meet. Somehow they were scheduled two separate days, so we got to do gymnastics 2 days in a row, along with soccer and our baby's turning three. So, you know, just a normal timeline in the Wilbur house. Just lots of stuff.
We did nothing this weekend. It was great. Actually, that's not true. We did go take family pictures on Friday, so that's always fun. But other than that, we did nothing. I mean,
is that really fun though?
You know, I will say this. So shout out the girl. Her name's also Allie. She's my favorite Allie that I know. But she does an amazing job, and the kids like.
Oh yeah, your family pictures are adorable.
The kids love her to death, and she had Lincoln just absolutely rolling laughing. So like, yeah, family pictures are not typically a lot of fun because it's like a lot of prep and. Everybody's acting like a brat.
The whole way there, I'm like, you will smile. Just stop it.
But like,
don't touch the baby. Smile.
She's amazing. And our kids are not big enough yet to like have minds of their own like yours do. Like, we can usually just kind of like threaten them and say, like,
mine ice cream after never touch their siblings more than they do during family pictures.
On the way. Yeah.
And it's all like the older girls turning and looking to try and make the younger girls smile. And it's like, can you just do your job? Your job is just to look at the camera and smile. Don't worry about their job.
So, but yeah, so it's still pretty good. We also do like the 20-minute sessions, like 20, 30 minutes and we're out. So, but anyway, yeah, weekend was good. Football was fun. Saturday, there was a lot of good games on Saturday, really kind of from the start of the day until the end of the day. And then it ended pretty well. So how do you want to start? What do you want to start with?
Dealer's choice. We both had a pretty good weekend. So I'm good with starting wherever.
We'll start with you. Shout out to Billy Napier. Picks up his second SEC win of the year. It only took about 20 Texas A&M players that were out with the flu and a backup quarterback, but he was able to get it done. Congratulations.
Hey, listen, this is a win you didn't think we were going to get. It's the first road win in almost 2 years, honestly.
I will say, I had A&M winning, but as soon as I saw that like 20 guys were out with the flu, I put a big bet on Florida. So,
well, you didn't text me and tell me that by any means.
I just saw it on the timeline. So I just thought that it was public information.
No, I mean that you were changing your opinion. I saw that there were people who were having a flu. But
I think, okay, so I'll say this. There are definitely positives to take away.
Yeah,
I would have still,
I think so.
If everyone would have been healthy and A&M would have had their starting quarterback and everything else, I would have stuck with my pick. But as soon as all that happened, I mean, I did. I flipped over to Florida.
Yeah.
I thought,
listen,
I thought it would have been a really bad loss. Like if they'd have lost that, I think that'd have been probably one of the worst losses of the season. Actually, no, it was the worst loss. A lot of Florida's losses have been to pretty good teams. If they'd have lost against A&M this weekend, that'd have been a really bad
loss. It would have been the worst loss so far on the schedule, for sure.
Like, I don't think Kentucky –
because they've played a lot of decent
good teams. I don't think Kentucky's good. Like, I don't think that's a good loss anymore looking back at it. You know, Kentucky's faltered a lot. But this would have been worse than that.
This would have been worse. Kentucky is currently the worst loss, right? Kentucky is the worst loss. And I think, you know, I do think if Florida got them later in the season, maybe the outcome is different. I don't know. That was a terrible showing by Florida. But, you know, this we talk about where we have in the past Florida not playing 60 minutes, right? Or like they show up for one quarter and that either is enough to get them the W against a really a not great team, or it's enough to show that there's some life, but not enough to beat a good team. And they've seen that multiple times this year from Florida. It's just they have not managed to play a complete game. This still isn't a complete game, in my opinion, but they won the first, third, and fourth quarters. And that's a step in the right direction. Particularly the third and fourth quarter is important to me. They won the third quarter against Georgia, like if you are breaking that down, which means they came out of the locker room on fire. Some kind of adjustments that were made at halftime carried over. And that's not something that we had seen prior to their third quarter game against Georgia last week. This week we saw they pitched a shutout third and fourth quarter. So that's, I believe they did.
Yeah, all the game scored in the second.
Yeah, so I mean, that is improvement for this team. I totally get that A&M had people out. I just like to see, I don't feel like we've seen Florida turn it on in the second half like we did this week. And they did for a while until truly they were out talented, outmanned by Georgia. So those are positives, right? Anthony Richardson was a true dual threat quarterback this game. And I think that for him to be successful, that is how Florida needs to use him. That's how he needs to play. He had 201 passing yards, 78 yards rushing. That's a decent day for him. That's what Florida needs to win ball games. They don't need him to put up 500 yards, but they need him to be serviceable both through the air and on the ground. And that's what he was. Florida had 292 yards on the ground. Their running backs really had a good game, almost 500 yards of offense, 493 yards of offense. So, you know, but offense aside, honestly, it's Florida's defense that has been absolutely garbage that took a little bit of a step in the right direction. They still can't tackle. They still are, you know, giving more yards than I would love to see, but a shutout second half is a step in the right direction for this defense.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. I think that, you know, you've got to get to a point where, you know, I don't think it should be expected of Florida to, at this point of the Napier regime, to continuously beat the great teams, right?
Sure.
They played well against Tennessee toward the end of the game, played well against Georgia for parts of it, but really weren't in that super close. Played well against LSU offensively, I'll say, defensively, certainly not. But, you know, I don't think anybody's and I think that we now are seeing that LSU is growing and is really a talented team, upsetting Alabama this week. So I don't think anybody's expecting Florida to consistently beat those teams, right?
No, but they've consistently been in it, and I think that's
that's at least a moral victory. Yeah. So
no, I think that's where you wanted the improvement.
Yeah, I mean, but that's my point. Yeah, I mean, that's fine. Either way, like being in that or not, I mean, you know, that's okay. But what they do need to do is they need to beat the bad teams, right? Sure. And A&M's A&M's a very bad team. Worst team in the SEC West.
Bad team. I mean, they are.
Yeah, they're a horrible team.
But
they're a horrible team this year, right? Like, I mean, I know that it makes you feel better to add the caveat that they're a talented team.
They are. They're a more talented team than Florida, but they have a worse record. They're terrible this year. That's not
– Yeah, they're just a bad team, right? And they also had 18 guys out with injuries this weekend. And so you've got to beat that. Like, they weren't a more talented team Saturday. Like, there's no doubt about it. Nine starters and seven more guys on the two deep out. Right. So, I mean, that's the thing. You got to win games like that.
Sure.
No matter how it looks. I thought A&M played fairly well in the first half. And then I think just the lack of depth eventually caught up to them. Like, they really did look like they were out of steam the second half. And when you lose that many guys from the two deep, I mean, Florida just did absolutely everything they wanted in the second half, both offensively and defensively, and looked really, really good doing it. And I think some of that's a credit to Florida, like you said, playing a more complete game than they had for most of the year. And part of that is, I mean, like I said, once all those guys were out, I put the money down on Florida because I was like, there's no way they can lose this game.
This is the thing. This makes Florida one game away from being bowl eligible. They're going to get bowl eligible. I don't think there's a way that they lose the next three games. So this was a huge, important milestone because they need those extra bowl practices. It doesn't really matter if you get sent to, you know, who knows what bowl and God knows where. It's the extra practices that are important, especially when you're installing a new system and you're a young team. And they took a step in that direction, and that's big. Because honestly, if they lost to Texas A&M, there was a chance that they weren't going to be bowl eligible. I think that while I think Florida is a better team than South Carolina, we've watched South Carolina get up for big games. We've watched them play like crap some weeks. I think that they are honestly a little bit like Florida in that they're kind of an enigma. Like, we don't really know what we're going to get this weekend. But if we had lost to Texas A&M, I would feel far less comfortable going into the South Carolina game, because I just think it's hard to recover from that many losses in a row.
Yeah. So I agree with that. Yeah. It was a big, big win to almost ensure bowl eligibility. Yeah. Like, a loss to Vandy would be, I mean, like, you know, the fans aren't going to want to lose to South Carolina or Florida State, but you could lose either one of those games or both those games and be like, ah, well, you know, we lost. But a loss to Vandy would be
not. But if they had lost to Texas A&M, it wouldn't have taken – they would have needed more than a win against Vandy to get there. And I don't know if that happens with that loss to A&M. And so when we talk about moral victories, this was a moral victory, because I think it is very, very difficult to motivate a team had they had lost this one.
Yeah. So. And South Carolina's, you know, been very up and down. ESPN gives South Carolina a 20 something percent chance to win this game. Mm-hmm. Like, Florida's a heavy favorite here. They opened up as a 2-score favorite. The game's at home. I don't want to say that it, but okay. So here's a take. It's not a must win in the sense of anyone's job or any stability or anything like that. But to me, this is about as close to them. Like, you've got to continue what you did positively last week.
I think so, too. I think that's a fair statement.
It's not a must win, because he's not getting fired if they lose, right? Like, it doesn't.
No, so, but it's a must win to continue any sort of momentum that you have. And I think you've got to beat the bad team, like we've talked about. Said it for years that, like, first you beat the bad team. And then, you know, and you get blown out by the good teams. Then you lose the good teams close, which I kind of think is where Florida is. For the most part, they beat who they're supposed to, and they hang around enough with the good teams, but they haven't closed the deal, except for Utah, this whole season on those good teams. So they're kind of maybe step two-ish of probably a 4-step process, right? But this game, I take it as a must win. I'm not saying that Gator fan's a must win, like he's going to be on the chopping block. He's not. But I think to consider this season successful, he needs a win against South Carolina. If they can beat South Carolina and they can beat Vanderbilt, they're going to be 7-5 at the worst, right? 8-4 at the best. I think that people would say that is an acceptable first season.
I think 7, because I think if he wins this weekend, they go 7-5. If they can find a way to upset Florida State at the beginning of the year, then 8-4 is even better. Yeah. But you're probably looking at a worst case 7-5 season.
And I think that's okay, right? Like,
especially when, I mean, Florida's over under in Vegas this year was 6.5. So you slightly overachieved, right? Like, you either were going to underachieve by half a game or overachieve by half a game. Right? That's essentially what we were expecting out of Florida, was 6.5 to 7 wins. I think you had them at maybe 8 or 9. I had 7 or 8. So, I mean, we were kind of in that range.
Yeah.
But especially for Florida at one point was, 4-4? And then you finish the season the last third at 3-1. It's really good, right? Yeah. Like, I think that's a good finish to the season. I will say, so this is a little bit of a hot take. I think that this is not just about Florida, but this is about any team in general. Mm-hmm. I think I hate on bowl season now. I'm going to hate on the bowl practice thing too. You get an extra 15 practices for bowl season. Most teams don't even use like half of those. Just because if your bowl falls earlier than later.
Depends on when your bowl falls, for sure. And your exams are for...
Right. Cool. So, like, they typically lose exam week. They typically just give them a week off.
And part of that is the bowls have started to be earlier, or the majority of bowls have started to be earlier and earlier. It used to just be like a random bowl here or there was early.
Yeah. And coaches also, like, they're out recruiting and you've got signing day in there and stuff like that too. And so,
five extra practices for a new team. I just think there are five extra practices.
For sure. I also think that roughly 35-40% of Florida's roster is not going to be here next year. And so you're also practicing with a bunch of guys that aren't there. I just think the bowl practices, because of all those things that we just mentioned, aren't as important as they used to be. I still think they're important.
Agree to disagree. I think that I think
they're just as,
important this year. I think that maybe what you're saying is a true statement for a team that
for every team
been around a little bit longer, but I don't think
let's reverse it then. Do you think they would have been more important if Florida got all the practices and there wasn't so much roster turnover? I'm just saying in the past it would have been more important. I just think now it doesn't. It's not as big of an advantage as it used to be. Maybe that's a better way to say the same thing.
I mean, and that may be the case. And I'll be interested to see how Napier takes advantage of it. And a lot of it will be out of his control. Like you said, it depends on when the exam schedule is. It depends on where their bowl game is. But I have a feeling he will take advantage of it as much as, you know, he's capable of. But I think any extra practice for Florida at this point is important. It could be 3, it could be 7, it could be 15. I think it's important for this team.
Yeah,
AR is probably coming back, right? So, it would be smart for him to come back.
I've heard he's generational, so we'll see. But I'm not saying it's not important. I'm not saying it's not important.
I get
it. Saying it's less important than it used to be. Okay. Or it used to be more important, if that makes you feel better to say it that way. All of the bowls just need to go away. Is what
I love
would agree
season.
To.
Oh,
32 team playoff. Let's go. Hey, we would be in that if that was to happen. Before we talk about the ranked section of the state up in the northwest corner, I'll give a quick shout out. Oh, I have had to do this pod with you for 4 straight losing seasons. I don't feel bad at all. We'll give a quick shout out to Brunt Insurance. Appreciate them and their support from Tallahassee to the Keys. Greg Brunt of Brunt Insurance will get you taken care of on any of your insurance needs. 954-589-2204, or you can go to bruntinsurance.com. But we would certainly suggest that you give Greg a call and chat with him today so you can talk a little college football and then see if he can save you some money on car, home, auto, that is car. You got a trailer, you got an RV, you got a boat, you got a motorcycle, whatever it is, Greg will get you taken care of. Brunt Insurance, 954-589-2204. Call Greg today. See if he, well, not today. It's late at night. But if you're listening to this, call Greg today and see if he can save you some money. Brunt Insurance, Greg Brunt, great folks over there. They insure both my cars and my home. Shout out Greg Brunt of Brunt Insurance. Okay. Did you stay up late and watch the game on Saturday night?
I did. But honestly, I started switching it over to other more interesting games because Florida State had it in the bag. So there was not a whole lot of intrigue. First of all, the funniest thing to me was when they announced that it was a sellout crowd as they're panning and there's all these empty seats. And it looked like Florida State had more fans than Miami did. So I think the conclusion that I've come to is Miami has decided if they don't offer seats and just leave a section empty, then they don't have to count it in the ticket total and they can say it's a sellout. So like we just didn't open these giant sections. They were never for sale. We sold the tickets that we decided to put, you know, make available or whatever. Therefore, it's a sellout because that's literally the only thing that it can explain them announcing a sellout crowd with massive, huge gaps in the stands. But I digress.
I've never been a big fan of the way that some teams, and I believe, not to give you guys a hard time, I believe Florida does this too. I've never been a big fan of the sports information departments announcing paid attendance. I've always been a fan of
pretty much everybody does. But
we do actual attendance, which is like, you know, to me, I care more about how many people are actually there.
Record that in real time?
I mean, it's all scan. Everyone does scan tickets. So, I mean, it all just goes into but it always gets announced in the third quarter anyway. You know, I mean, we're Florida. We count things quickly. Shout out to tomorrow night.
I don't know how Florida does that, but I'll tell you, every time they announce it, sellout, it looks pretty damn full. There's definitely,
never been a big fan of paid attendance, which Miami certainly does that. And Florida doing it.
Yeah, but there's 0% chance that all those completely empty sections were paid for.
Yeah, Florida doing it bothers me less because, you know, you're talking about, you know, what's the swamp hold, 89. And so, like, there might be, like, 89.5 or something. Right, like, you're talking about a difference of, like, 500 tickets. When Miami does it, they do a paid attendance of, like, 58,000 and you look on TV and you're like, there's 20,000 people there.
Right.
Like we're not talking 500 tickets of people that like got in traffic or sick or whatever and didn't show up. We're talking like 40 grand that you guys are just making up. So anyway, yeah, I mean, but it was fun, you know, game winning touchdown a minute and a half into the game. That's always a good time.
Yeah,
from start to finish, I'll tell you, I spoke with somebody before the game. Let's be careful. I spoke with somebody or chatted and heard some things from somebody on the team. And, you know, there's always a, you know, any athlete is going to think when they're going into a big game like that, like, oh man, we got it right. Because you've game planned and you've studied and you've done film and you, yeah, if everything that Florida State or Florida or Miami or A&M or whatever, if everything you call that day goes perfect, like, yeah, you are going to win that game. Right. Because that's, if you execute it 100%, like you're just going to win. The problem is no team has ever played a game and executed every single play at 100%. Right. The other team sometimes wins battles and stuff. So I heard on Friday that the confidence level was just like through the roof. From Florida State. And it was said in the way of like, hey, we're going to kill them. Like we're going to crush them. We know everything they're going to do. We are going to win this game by a ton. It is not going to be close.
Right.
And not really like in a cocky way, like, oh man, they should, you know, we're such hot crap. Like it was more so just like, we know like the style of offense that they run, the way that their defense, does certain things. Like we've basically been preparing for it all year because it's similar to this team, this team, this team, and this team. And they were like, we're so confident that we're going to have success. And man, I heard that. And I was just like, I wonder how true, like, cause like any kid is going to be confident, like every player. I mean, they're D1 athletes.
Well, you so, want like, them to be confident. Right. Like if they're saying like, I mean, oh man, they're going to kill us. That would be a great thing.
I hope the Miami players were that confident too, right? Like, I hope they weren't going into it like, oh man, we're going to get killed. And so anyway, I was just like, man, I don't know. Maybe there's like some overconfidence and like an hour. So there was really good games on all day. Like that Tennessee Georgia game really wasn't great, but it was on all day. And I had some other stuff on that was pretty fun with the other TVs and stuff, but like an hour before kickoff, like I just got so extremely nervous. And I was like, because I mean, it's still a rivalry. Van Dyke looked like he was going to be starting. And you're like, oh man, he was the one thing that like Miami could kind of rest their hopes on.
Right.
And then Florida State just absolutely kicked their teeth in. And it was fantastic and really did absolutely everything they wanted to. Miami had a top 20 rushing defense going into the night. And Florida State threw the ball 12 times. They literally, or Jordan Travis threw the ball 12 times. Tate did come in and throw it a couple of times. But, yeah, I mean, they just ran for absolutely everything they wanted to. Running backs had over 100 yards receiving, had over 270 rushing yards in the game. It was just domination from the word go. Miami did get a field goal off, but the second largest margin of victory for the Noles ever. They liked to make jokes about winning 52-10 a couple of years ago. And then this score ended up being the same margin. So fun stuff. It was a fun game to watch. It is a lot of fun to watch a rivalry game. Florida State, I believe, had like a 99% chance to win before halftime. That's like true. it had already gone up to over. Like ESPN's like, you know, percent chance to win. Was already up over 99% at halftime. Before halftime, I'm sorry. And so it's great to watch a game like that. Like you talk about no stress in the world. You know, I think Florida State is a good team. They're an above average team. I do think they're a top, right about where they're ranked. I think they're a top 20-ish team in the country. They had a really rough stretch. They played, like you talked about, they played some good teams fairly close, just couldn't get over the hump. And then they went out and just beat the crap out of a bad team. They'll get to play Syracuse this weekend where they're a touchdown favorite. There's some questions around Syracuse's starting quarterback, whether he's going to be in or not. Whether he's in or not, Florida State needs to go out and get that win to get win number seven. They're going to beat Louisiana to get win number eight. And then it all comes down to Florida. If Florida State can, you know, their expected win total this year was the same thing, 6.5 this year. If they can get to 8 wins against Louisiana, if they can get to 9 against Florida and then have a shot at 10 in the bowl, or if you lose to Florida or Syracuse and have a shot at 9 in the bowl, that's still 3 more than you were kind of expected to do, which I think is it probably accelerates the rebuild.
Or 2.5, you know, same way that you mentioned it with Florida.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people had Florida State only winning 6 of theirs. Like, the juice was on that side. But so 2.5 games more if you get to 9, 3 if you get to 10.
Yeah.
It probably accelerates the rebuild by a year. You know, I don't think nobody expected – again, nobody
pretty
really –
pretty far into the rebuild, though. I mean, this is year 3. This is not like – is usually, for most schools, the you know –
the show me
do it or get off the pot kind of
kind
of year. I think accelerates to the 10, rebuild. What's the window for the rebuild?
I think that the Florida State administration, I think we've talked about this in the past, but just as a refresher,
this is always
interesting
topic.
Yeah, I think the Florida State administration understood where the program was, like how far into the dirt the program was.
How do you keep fans? And I'm kind of asking as a Florida fan, because I am a proponent of giving coaches enough time, right? I don't think 3 years is enough time for any coach. I think sometimes you have a situation like you had with McElwain or you had with Taggart where you know earlier in that this is not the person for the rebuild. So it's literally easier to just kind of bail and start over than it is to give them the full time and have the rebuild not work and then start over. But I do find that at the very least, Florida fans are not patient past the 3-year mark, essentially. And so it is interesting, though, because I really haven't heard much from Florida State fans. And obviously now with, they've come on this season a little bit, but like, I don't know. I'm surprised.
I think they want to see. I think it matters. Well, no. After 4 games last year, when they were 0-4 and had lost to Jacksonville State and gotten blown out by Wake Forest, I mean, that's all anybody was talking about. Was like, this is it. This guy's got to go. He's going to be worse than Taggart. I wasn't saying that. Like, I've tried to be pretty positive about things. But yeah, there was a large contingent of the Florida State fan base that was very upset. To answer your question, I think Mike, right or wrong, by this administration, gets a complete pass for 2020. I think that they look at where the program was in 2020 and look at the fact that he got rid of 45 players off of an 85-player roster and dealt with COVID, not having to have any visits on campus, a schedule where 5 games got rescheduled and moved around. I think they look at 2020 as a complete wipeout. Whether that's right or wrong, you can at least understand it. Like, you can say, like, okay, that makes sense. So you start 2021 and you start 0-4. And you're like, this is the worst program start in history since before Bowden. Like, what the hell is going on? But then you come out of that at 5-3. And you play your last 3 games relatively closely. You lose by 1 score to Clemson. You play NC State really well with a bunch of guys with the flu. And then you play Florida close on the road and lose by a field goal, right? And so I think that this year was very important for the administration to see, okay, you were trending up in year 2, right? You get a pass for year 1, but you were trending up in year 2. Can you continue to trend up in year 3? And so that's where I think Florida State needed to get to 7 or 8 wins. And anything above that is, wow, you were trending up probably a little better than we even expected this year. So, yeah, I mean, I think Florida State fans would be thrilled with 10. I don't think anyone expected 10 coming into this year, but I think they'd be pretty happy with 8 or 9 as well, right? I think they won. I think they lost games that they were supposed to lose. They were a favorite against Wake Forest. I will say that. So that one kind of flips, but they won a couple of games they weren't supposed to win. And so that kind of balances out. They weren't supposed to beat LSU.
Right.
They certainly weren't supposed to beat Louisville with a backup quarterback. And so, yeah, I think they won some games they weren't supposed to. They maybe lost one game they were supposed to win. And if you do that, you're probably hitting that season expectation. And I think fans are relatively happy with that. I do think the Florida game is really, really important. I think that this is a big opportunity for Florida State to beat Florida. And we'll certainly talk about it more over the next couple of weeks because, you know, we both play schools that we should beat pretty bad after next – or, you know, on next week in Vandy and Louisiana. But I think that, you know, the Florida, if they finish 8-4, lose to Florida close, and then win a bowl, like, I mean, they're going to win 9 games. I mean, that's a pretty good year, right? Like, but I think he's got a chance to make it a phenomenal year by beating a Florida team that's been pretty inconsistent. And a team that Florida State should probably score on. Like, I'm not confident that Florida's defense has like everything figured out just yet, but I think the Florida game will be pretty important to whether or not this was like, that was an above average year, or like, wow, that was a great year. Like, you either got to 9 or 10 wins by what you did at the end of the year. So I don't know. I mean, where are we in the rebuild though? I mean, yeah, if you win 10 games, if you were to get to 9 or 10 wins this year, I mean, I think the expectation then again would be to find a way to get to 10 wins next year. And if you stack back-to-back 10 win years, then I think you're looking at, you know, in 2024, I think you're a serious contender for the ACC. I'll say this, if Jordan Travis comes back next year, I think they're in contention for the ACC. Like, the expectations around how good the team will be are somewhat tied to whether or not he comes back. If he comes back, he's been really good this year, like phenomenally good this year. All of the advanced metrics have him in the top 15 of all quarterbacks. It's not just an ACC thing. He's in the top 3.
I don't know that I would say top 15 is phenomenal.
Top 15 out of 130? I mean, that's the top 10%.
I mean, I don't know. Top 10% isn't phenomenal in my book, but I guess.
I mean, it's an A, right? 90 to 100 would be an A. So I mean, he's getting
depending
A.
Depending on the school you went to, the school I went to is 94 to 100.
Oh, wow. Back in the 40s. No, but I think he's been really good. I think he's been an excellent quarterback this year. And if he comes back, I think the expectations will be that Florida State competes for the ACC, right? Mm-hmm. I think the only acceptable ACC loss next year will be Clemson. Florida State's schedule also lines up really, really well next year, as I also think Florida's does, just for the record. I think Florida's schedule gets a little bit easier next year. You get Arkansas as opposed to A&M. You do have to go to LSU, but I think Utah will be down. You get Tennessee at home. I don't think Kentucky will be good since Levis is moving on. So I think Florida's schedule lines up pretty good as well. But yeah, I think Florida State's schedule lines up, honestly, even easier. You know, they had a lot of tough games this year, but they played North Alabama. They play Southern Miss. They play Duke. They play Wake, who won't have Hartman anymore. They play Virginia Tech at home, who's the worst on that side of the conference. I don't think Miami will be back just yet. They play at Boston College, who loses their quarterback. So, yeah, I think that next year Florida State really needs to find a way to win 10 games. You know, the only three tough games on the schedule to me are LSU, Florida, and Clemson. Essentially, you need to win one of those, right? Find a way to win one of those three games. And you get to play LSU and Orlando. But I think that's similar to Florida, no? I mean, I think if Anthony Richardson leaves, I think the expectation is probably going to be around that 8-9 wins again. And if he comes back, I mean, you're going to be looking at like 9-10-11. Like, well, you need to win more games, right?
I mean,
if he's back.
9 wins isn't possible for Florida this year. So the ceiling is
next year.
No, I understand that. But what I'm saying, you said 9 wins again. I mean, I guess they could win their bowl game and get 9 wins. But the expectation is more wins than this year. Whatever this, whatever it ends up being, if it ends up being 9 wins in a bowl game, that's the 9th win. Florida fans are going to expect that the bowl game is the 10th win next year. And for better or for worse, I'm not saying that I necessarily agree with that, but that's the way Florida fans are wired, right? Like, next season has to be better than this season. And I, if I'm advising Anthony Richardson, I'm telling him to come back. I mean, I know nobody cares what I think on that topic, but I think he could definitely benefit from another year back. If he's not, then Florida will be breaking in a new quarterback, but that's what they were doing this year too. So if
Anthony Richardson has anything but a first round grade, I would say he should come back. If he has a first round grade, he should leave.
Well, that's a fair statement.
You shouldn't turn down that much money.
I will be surprised if he is a first round grade, but I agree with you.
Because he's not starting
the first round grade. Should go ahead and go to the NFL because you're risking injury. But
$40 million.
But I also will be surprised if that's where his draft grade comes back. So, I mean, the caveat, I think he should come back unless he grades out as a first round draft pick, which I don't think he will. But I don't think that there's a scenario where Florida fans think that the same or less than wins as this season is acceptable, regardless of how this season shakes out. It's got to be at least one more next year, no matter what. And is that fair? Probably not. But I think that that's how that Florida fans.
I don't know. I think it is. I don't know. I think that is fair. to say that next year should be one more,
at least
one more win. Yeah, I think so.
I think it's a hard blanket statement to make because you got to see what factors come into play and what plays out. I don't think Gator fans will care what those factors are or how things play out. I think for most people, they will say,
but you want to see him, especially with Anthony Richardson back, right? Yeah. Like, to me, that's the big caveat. If you're bringing in a new quarterback, you can somewhat maybe excuse it with that and say like, oh, you got a new quarterback. Like, it just took a little time.
But yeah.
Overall, I think they want to see progress, right? Yeah. And so
the easiest way to see progress in other ways. I don't think Florida fans agree with that necessarily.
Yeah. I mean, I find it hard to think that Florida can afford to lose games, more games next year than they lose this year. Yeah. I think that's not, and
what happened,
and the biggest reason,
set the bar so high.
It was a 6.5 this year, so I don't know how high we're thinking about
set that bar.
But but I think the schedule helps Florida out some next year.
Yeah.
Think the second year of Billy's system should help some folks out next year.
Yeah.
You've got less of them. And I think, you know, I mean, Billy's tagged as a great recruiter and is recruiting very well right now. You can go out, and if you do it properly, you can find guys in the portal that make a massive, massive difference.
Sure. Dan Norvell's great at it.
Yeah. Norvell has been phenomenal at it. Look at all the guys making impacts on this team. Yeah. Trey Benson went for 200 yards. And I like portal guy, Jermaine Johnson, first round pick, Jared Verse, first round pick, Johnny Wilson, best wide receiver, all portal guys.
And so to like, to Napier, he brought guys in the transfer portal who have really played out well for Florida as well. Like Osiris Torrance has been huge.
That's kind
for
of a cheating
Florida.
One. That's a cheating one.
I get it. He followed him here. But I mean, think about that. This is a guy that was playing at Louisiana who is one of the top individual linemen in the SEC currently.
I'll give you Ricky. That's cheating with Torrance.
Well, listen, it's ballsy, right, to bring your offensive lineman from Louisiana and have faith that he is going to make an impact in the SEC. And not only has he made an impact for Florida, but he's on a bunch of, semifinalist awards. He's making waves, not just on our team, but in the conference as a whole, which is, you know, part of, you know, any semblance of offensive success that Florida's had.
Yeah.
You can credit to him. I mean, and that was, I get it. It's a guy you are comfortable with, but still a Louisiana player that you are comfortable enough to pluck and play in the SEC and have it work out is a gamble.
Yeah. No, he's been big. And like I said, so you can make a lot of impacts there, especially in a year where Florida will recruit well, but of Florida's recruits right now, actually we can even look top. We can do 247 Florida recruiting rankings, recruiting class. How many guys in this top 10 class? So it's 9 right now. How many guys in this top 9, potentially higher class, are going to be instant impacts?
Not many, because that's not how it works with recruits.
You got to
develop talent elsewhere. I mean, there may be some DBs that play right away, and that's a more need-based thing than necessarily a skill-based thing. Is that like we need some bodies? They got to be better than the bodies we currently have. So even if you're pretty green, you might see the field. But in general, you want to give your recruits time to develop.
I mean,
hopefully, we'll see how Napier does in the transfer. He's mentioned that there's going to be attrition. We know attrition's coming. Attrition has already started some by choice, some not by choice. And we'll see. I don't know. All I can say is at least our recruiting is still, you know, moving right along. The record may not be what Florida fans want it to be, but it is at the moment continuing to hold together and moving right along. We are moving into flip season, so we will see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how these last, 5-ish weeks go, 6 mm-hmm. weeks until signing day,
signing
maybe
day.
A little bit more, 6 or 7 weeks. Florida sitting at 9 right now. Can they bump up in close to the 5? Do they stay where they're at? Do they fall back a couple? Like, what's the final look like? Mm-hmm. Again, we will make a big deal of it on here, but to immediate success, the class ranking, that's the, I was talking with Newberg about this the other day. Fans love like the class ranking argument. Mm-hmm. When like, I mean, you know, A&M had the number one class last year and right. Look what, you know, look what that, you know, but it's a lot of, and I do think coaches care because a lot of them have bonuses and stuff tied to it, but
it depends on the coach, I think, but some of them do really, really care.
Well, like I said, so I know, I won't say anybody specific, but I know coaches that have legitimately had for if you're inside the 247 top five, you get this bonus. If you're in the 247 top 10, you get this
Urban bonus. Urban Meyer used to talk in his office, like to their office staff about wanting to win what he called the recruiting national title. So like it was something that he took very, very seriously. I honestly think that's part of his demise at the end of his time at Florida, because he had a bunch of really highly rated guys that didn't necessarily plug into any specific place well. So I think that there is a risk in recruiting too. Like it makes more sense to recruit the players that fit your need and that fit your scheme than it does to sign all top guys who aren't going to fit your scheme. So you may, maybe true. You.
So I got into it with Ruiz the other day. I don't think that Florida State will necessarily out-recruit Miami anytime in the very near future, but I don't think Mario Cristobal will ever out-coach.
I haven't thought Mario Cristobal was a good coach for a long time, right? Like, this is not a new thought for me. I just don't think he's a good coach. I think he's a good recruiter.
Let me back up from that for just a second and say that there will be a threshold that gets high enough to where if the talent that he's able to stockpile is so much higher,
you don't have to be as good a coach.
Right. You're not going to out coach that difference. I just don't think he'll be able to do it, because I think they'll lose too many games in between now.
We're moving into this era of recruiting that is, you know, uncharted territory at this point. The only examples we have to look at are programs like Texas A&M, who bought the number one class, in the country, and is kind of self-imploding. There's a lot of rumors about what's going on in the locker room. There's guys that have been suspended for their behavior inside the locker room. And we don't know for sure that it's a whole bunch of egos that have crashed into each other, but it sure looks like that from the outside. And I think that Miami is very much at risk for something like that. If you have a locker room filled with guys who only want to be there because of the money that they're being paid, which let's be real. Nobody wants to play in front of a stadium that's pretty much empty 45 minutes from campus, right? Nobody wants to play in practice in facilities that we all consider subpar in comparison to a lot of college football. So you've got South Beach, which is obviously attractive to 18 to 23-year-old, 24-year-old guys. And you got the money. And literally, that is the things that Miami brings to the table. I'm not saying I don't think money shouldn't be a factor in any recruit's decision, because get what you can, right? Like but it shouldn't be the only factor. And I feel that the players that sign with Miami, it's pretty much the only factor. And that doesn't seem like a good, sustainable, long-term recipe for success to me. And maybe I'll be wrong, right? We'll see how this plays out, but it sure as heck wasn't a good recipe this year.
No, I will say this. I think I'll disagree with you slightly that money is the only factor down there, just because Mario has been a pretty good recruiter at other places.
Sure.
But I do think
it's a main factor.
It's a big factor. Right. Yeah. I'll go with that. But
I don't think it's the only factor, but I think it is the driving factor. And I think that when money is the driving factor, like Miami's currently not really developing tons of talent. And granted, Cristobal just got there, so we can give him time to see if he really does, you know, step up that development. But lately Miami has not been known for developing talent. So you're not going there because you know it's going to be your meal ticket to the NFL.
I got a question for you. Last year, if your coach played a 3-point game against Florida State, and then this year your new coach lost 45-3, would you be calling for his head? Like, if Napier comes out and loses 45-3.
I would not be pumped, right? Like, I would not be pumped, like, because these are mostly the same pieces.
I saw Florida fans saying, like, if we lose 45-3, in 2 weeks, I'm starting the Fire Napier chance.
45 losing by that much to anybody will probably get called for your head.
Especially your biggest rival.
I'm not saying that's fair at all. Yeah. But yeah, that would like it is wild.
I don't think that happens. I think there's a 1% chance that happens.
Yeah. Like, oh, don't worry. Enjoy it now while it happens. Because with our recruiting, you're never going to see another victory. And like you look at that and you're like, found the most delusional fan base today. I found it.
Yeah. So I'm not predicting that. I don't think that happens.
Says levels. But... Yeah. This is levels.
So, all right. Let's recap some picks. Liberty not only covered 13.5 points against Arkansas, they won. Arkansas with a furious comeback. Liberty stops the two-point conversion, wins by two. So I get the point there. You shouldn't have gone against me. Hey, this
year. Liberty, did I not?
No. You took Arkansas because you were trying to pick up points.
Oh.
We both took FSU. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to let you pick. We have 10 games this week, and you really need to come back. So I'm going to let you pick all the games first, and then I'll follow. Okay. Or we could do it like this. I could really give you a chance here on this one. Well, let's recap these, and then we'll talk about what our thing is. Kentucky covered against Missouri. You got the point there. UF covered against A&M. You got the point there. But, again, my solace is that I made actual money by betting on UF that day. I got the point with Georgia. You picked Tennessee. I got the point with LSU as well. I can't believe you took that huge spread. I felt good about LSU covering. I didn't think they'd win, but – that game was phenomenal. I didn't feel good about this one. I thought that Clemson would – I ended up betting on Clemson, so I lost some money here. I took Notre Dame and got the point there. So I went 5-2 on the week. You went 3-4 season totals. I am 47-26. You are 39-34. So you're 8 points back. You need a comeback here. So there's 10 games. You can pick – so we can either do it regular and we can both just pick and records are records or you can pick the 10 games and I'll automatically just take the other side of every game and whoever gets more at the end of the week gets all the points. So you could, so like if you go 6-4, you get 6 and I get nothing.
Let's just see.
All right. All right. This is a dangerous proposition. All right. Florida State's a 6.5-point favorite at Syracuse. I think they keep it rolling. I think Florida State wins.
I think Florida State too.
I love it. I love it. Last few weeks, you've been on my train here. LSU, this is a weird line, and this is Vegas telling you not to take LSU because something weird's going to happen. But LSU, now in the driver's seat for the West, is a 3-point favorite at Arkansas. Arkansas, who just lost to Liberty last week. Vegas is literally telling you not to take LSU here, but I'll take LSU.
I'm going to take LSU too, but that is really bizarre. So they're, I mean, that is a bizarre line, and I don't know what Vegas knows that we don't, but it's always annoying because Vegas always knows something. More. But
And we'll probably lose this, but whatever. Louisville is a 7-point underdog at Clemson. I think I'll take Louisville here.
I was just about to say I'm going to take Louisville, but all right, give me Louisville. That's all right.
All right. Sorry, I said I was going to let you pick first. I'll let you pick the next few. Alabama is a 12-point favorite at Ole Miss. Alabama coming off the LSU loss.
Give me Alabama. That line could have been 30, and I would be taking Alabama after last week.
I agree. I'm sorry that we picked the same first four, but I think Alabama rolls them.
Yeah.
No pun intended. Tulane is a 2-point favorite against UCF. That game is at Tulane, and the winner wins the American or wins the first seed in the American. I don't know if they play for like a conference championship. I think they play.
They play for a conference championship. They do.
So this would be like for the one seed or for the better seeding, and I think American standings. Oh, it could be for that division. If they have two divisions. Let's see here. No, I don't think they have divisions. So it must just be – oh, Cincinnati. Yeah, I think this would knock you. So, yeah, I think this game is really important, though. But give me Tulane. I'm not picking UCF.
All right, give me UCF.
I put that Florida State was the best team in the state, and I have had UCF fans in my mentions all day, like for the last 2 days, basically saying, like, don't you know that 7-3 is better or 7-2 is better than 6-3? And I was like,
yeah, but if you do it against the deaf, dumb, and blind,
yeah, it's not the same thing. I don't believe in the transitive property, but you guys got beat down by Louisville. We beat Louisville. Right. And on a neutral field, Florida State would be a 7 to 10 point favorite against UCF. Like, at least.
We win 8 out of 10 times for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, I love Liberty. I love what they're doing right now, but I think Florida State 6-3 is probably better than their 8-1. Right. Like, I just, I'm happy for Liberty.
No, not like, probably. It is.
Yeah. But so don't, this record thing.
UCF fans love the transitive property, though.
Yeah. So, Georgia Tech is a 1.5 favorite against Miami.
God, I hope that happens so bad. Give me Georgia Tech.
Yeah, same. We can disagree on this one. UF is an 8-point favorite against South Carolina.
I will take UF.
I like South Carolina. I think Florida wins, but I can give you a chance to get a point here. Texas is a 7-point favorite against, I think they're number 4. Is TCU number 4 right now? Mm. Texas is a 4-point favorite. I'm sorry, a 7-point favorite against number 4 TCU.
Is that weird? Like that Texas.
I think TCU is incredibly overrated and hasn't played anyone yet. Mm. So, not super weird.
All right, I'll take TCU.
I'll take Texas just to keep it interesting. Wake Forest is a 3.5 point favorite against UNC. Wake has dropped the last couple of games. UNC did not look very good against Virginia, so this is a crap bowl here. But both teams are ranked. So, what you like?
Give me North Carolina.
I'll take Wake. I really have no clue on this one, so I'll just take the opposite. And then a team without a coach and a team that might not have a coach, but it's going to be a lot more expensive to get rid of. Auburn is a 2-point favorite against A&M. Auburn.
Yeah,
I was gonna say I'm not cheering for
them. And honestly, so. I will tell you what, I kind of hope Auburn hires Cadillac Williams, because I think I like listening to his interviews. I think the team is playing hard for him. I think that there's very few people that understand what it means to be an Auburn Tiger more than he does, and I think he can relate to the players. So if I'm Auburn, I'd consider hiring him.
Yeah, I like Cadillac Williams. He was fun as heck to watch for like a year and a half in Tampa. That's it. We'll recap him next week. So anything else? Any big takeaways? You got some playoff teams. What do you think here?
I think 2 SEC teams get in. I think there is a great, 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 great chance an 11-1 Tennessee team still makes it into the playoffs. I honestly was kind of surprised at their performance against Georgia. I think that Georgia played one of the more complete games we've seen them play. I think Tennessee played one of the worst games we've seen them play. Now, is that because Georgia's that much better? I don't know, maybe, but I honestly expected Tennessee to have a lot better showing than they did. But I think that there's a very good shot, especially with LSU being in control of the West. I don't think LSU makes it into the playoffs, even if they win, but I think Tennessee sneaks in there.
Okay, so I'm going to disagree with that. I think if LSU beats Georgia, because their loss to Florida State came so far early in the year, and I think that if Florida State wins the next three, they'll be a top 15 team. And so then they've got a top 15 loss, top 5 loss to Tennessee. I think LSU would make it in, and they would. It would be Tennessee that gets bumped.
So I think one less loss, and with one of LSU's losses being to Tennessee, I just think the playoff.
So I think that's what should happen.
Yeah.
But I think the playoff committee has always valued 1 conference championships and 2 what have you done for me lately? Right.
Yeah. Remember, I understand that, but I think the head to head will be a factor as well. I don't know. I mean, we'll see.
I think the early head to head, it should be. But I don't think it will. I think the playoff committee will put in – I just cannot see – unless an SEC champion had like 4 or 5 losses, like I just can't see a situation.
I think there's a scenario where Tennessee gets in and LSU gets in and Georgia doesn't if LSU beats Georgia.
See, I don't know. I think Georgia would still be above Tennessee because of, again, that head-to-head that you're talking about. I think
head to head counts once, but not in another. I mean,
so I think head to head is trumped by a championship. Would so
maybe
be
there'll be three SEC teams in the
maybe.
I mean, honestly, if Alabama had beaten LSU, we'd be sitting here talking about there potentially being three in the SEC championship game. Well, in the playoffs. So maybe that'll happen. We'll see.
Look who's up and around there, right? Like, I think TCU loses this weekend, mm-hmm. and the Big 12, you know, is booted out. Ohio State and Michigan, like, one of them are going to lose to the other one.
Right.
And then they'll be out. And so you're talking, do you have three SEC teams, or does Oregon find a way to sneak in?
See, I think Oregon ends up losing before the end of the season too. I think there's a decent chance that that they're gone.
Oregon plays Washington this weekend. I think they win that. They do play Utah, but Mario's not there anymore, so they don't have to worry as much about that one. They do play Utah and Oregon State to finish it up. Yeah. But then I think they would play I think the way it works is they would play USC in the in the championship, which would be a ton of fun. Like, that'd be a great – I mean, and the winner would – assuming either team hadn't lost already, the winner would go to the playoff, which would be fine with me. Like,
maybe.
USC or Oregon – well, I mean, Oregon at that point, I mean, they're both going to have just one loss if that's the case. Like, if they win out.
I think that there's an argument to, I don't know. I feel like we leave Pac 10 teams out all the time. So,
yeah, I'd be pretty surprised if they put
Pac-12,
in.
Pac 12, excuse me.
Yeah, I think but I also think what's most likely is I don't think that LSU can beat Georgia. Like, we just said a lot to say.
I don't think that they do either, but.
We just said a lot to say, like, oh, if
LSU
super
doesn't, then I think we really are looking at Georgia and Tennessee both getting in.
Georgia, Tennessee, a Big Ten and a Pac-12 mm-hmm. is the way I see it going down.
Yeah.
Like, the winner of Oregon, USC, or, I mean, if TCU keeps, I mean, TCU goes undefeated, I mean, they're
going
to get in.
Right, but I just don't see them going undefeated. Yeah.
So, okay. What I'm hoping for is I really need Tulane to win this weekend, mm-hmm. and then I need Cincinnati to beat Tulane in 2 weeks so that Liberty, if that happens, Liberty will be the highest ranked group of five, and they'll go to a New Year's Six Bowl. That'd be fun.
And Liberty picking up will cry.
I'd love it. Yeah, Liberty going to a New Year's Six Bowl, that'd be a lot of fun. They might go to the Orange Bowl. You get to play like Clemson. That'd be fun. I might go.
That'd be cool. Yeah,
probably won't. But I
there'll actually be fans in the stands, so that'll be cool.
Hey, there were last week. We brought some fans. So
I'm just meaning games played in Miami. But yeah, well, I mean, Florida State's gonna put fans in the stands no matter what.
So, all right, that's all I got. We'll be back next week. We'll see if you guys can avoid an upset.
Have one more thing to report. Tampa Catholic beat Jesuit this year. First time it's happened in 22 years. I was a freshman at Tampa Catholic, a freshman cheerleader on the field. The game took place at Plant.
Oof.
Yes.
I made eight times before, but oof.
Tampa Catholic beat Jesuit. So I made all the calls to my family. My brothers were all not so pumped. It was awesome.
They all went to Jesuit.
Rub it in. Yep. And they all call me every single year after this game. Every single year without fail. So I finally got to be able to be the one to make those phone calls, and it was very exciting.
That's awesome. I saw the celebration. I saw everybody running on the field. Mm-hmm. It looked like fun.
It is one of the coolest high school football rivalries. Really, really neat and nice to have it swing back the other direction for once.
That's awesome. Well, congrats to you guys. We'll be back next week, Monday or Tuesday night. I'm not sure. Again, shout out Brenn Insurance, 954-589-2204. See you guys next week. Go Noles.
Go Gators.
Oh, man, I forgot to end it quick.